podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm Dr. Graham Taylor. As a professional in your field, how many days each week are you working? 3, 5, maybe 6? And how many hours are you putting in on average? 30, 40, maybe 50 or 60? And as you think about the hours you're working, would you say that you've achieved and are living the proverbial work-life balance you want? And by the way, who's in charge of your schedule anyway? Well, these are some sobering questions, aren't they? And may lead us to ask whether we are really in control of creating the life we want to be living and sharing. Our guest today, Joe Sanok, is no stranger to having worked 60-hour weeks early in his career. However, he made some significant changes, allowing him to now work 4 days or less a week and open up time to dedicate to pursuing his self-care and time with family and friends. Joe's the creator behind the Practice of the Practice podcast and blog. He is a speaker, mental health counselor, business consultant, and podcaster. In 2012, Joe started the Practice of the Practice podcast, and it's become the number one podcast for private practitioners to find innovative ways to start, grow, and scale their private practice. Joe's been featured in the Huffington Post, Psych Central, Reader's Digest, Bustle, and Yahoo News. He is a keynote speaker and the author of 5 books. Joe is with us today to talk about his new book, Thursday is a New Friday, and to share with us how we can take charge of and create our own work-life balance. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Oh, Graham, I'm so excited to be back.
Nice to have you here. Hey, you know, Joe, I know that you're encouraging us to break away from a pretty well-ingrained paradigm of a standard 5 to 6 day, 40 to 60 hour work week. What was occurring in your life, though, that caused you to stop and examine your work schedule and begin to change it up to this 4 day or less per week now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting how in life sometimes we lose our way. Because when I look at my freshman year of college, the first semester, I'm at freshman orientation, and the advisor says, what do you want your classes to be? You know, here's all the psych classes you got to take, all the math. Like, what do you want your schedule to be? And I was like, well, do I have to take classes on Friday? And they're like, no. I mean, my mind was blown going from high school where you're there every day that, right, wait, I can make a schedule and take Fridays off. So all through college, I only had one 8 a.m. class on Friday. The rest of the time I didn't have it. I was like, I'm getting it out of the way on Friday. So all the way through, even my first job out of grad school, I negotiated a 4 day work week. And I thought, like, that was just normal. You can negotiate these things. And then, right, you know, slowly but surely I start working for community mental health, and, you know, there's all these needs and you're on call. And then I was a foster care supervisor and was working at a college and got a private practice. And it's like, I forgot what it was like to really have a long weekend, what that was for me. Right. And then in 2012, my daughter, who right before her first birthday needed open heart surgery, she had open heart surgery and went through that whole process. Wow. And she had it on a day we'll never forget. It's May 4th. So Star Wars Day. So it was good karma. And she came out of it just fine. She has no health concerns now. You know, that's 10 years ago. And right after she got the all clear, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. So right on the heels of it, you know, 2012, I then have to go back into kind of the hospital system. I'm flying down to Texas to get all sorts of scans, get my thyroid removed and a bunch of other stuff, and go through radioactive iodine treatment. You know, that same year, my grandma died and a friend of mine's wife got breast cancer. And it just was like everything hit the fan for the family. My boss was amazing. The college was amazing. You know, the clients I had were flexible. They, you know, I was very open with them about the things that were going on. But it made me ask myself, why do I want to work for someone else? Why do I want to do this 40-hour a week job, you know, plus 15 hours a week of clinical work and, you know, starting this podcast and doing all these things? Is this the long-term plan? Right. And really said to myself, you know, if I was going to design my own life, like, I'd go back to that same way I lived in college where, you know, I could get a bunch of stuff done on a Friday and then have 2 full days to really hang out with my friends, do hobbies, and come back and just kill it. So started moving towards that and never really realized that that was a superpower that other people didn't have. You know, you just assume that the way you do it, the rest of the world does it. And kind of through this process of writing this book, really realized a lot of the skill set that I had intuitively, but then had also developed that might help some other people.
That's really good. I would imagine each person coming into this is going to have their own it, what might motivate them to take this next step. It sounds like yours was life became very precious to you. Your daughter, yourself, your grandmother passing, that life became very precious. And so it's about how do I want to construct a life so that I can really emphasize and prioritize those things that are precious and important to me.
Absolutely. I think that so often, especially early in our career, you know, we want to take each opportunity. We want to show our boss that we can do it. And that's totally appropriate. But if we see that as a chapter rather than the actual book, it's, you know, once you've established yourself, you know, there's a certain level where you can say, well, what do I want to design here? How can I be my most creative self? Am I doing the work that matters most to me? Even when we kind of get into, you know, those questions you started this show with, you know, how much are we intentionally saying, here's how and where I'm spending my time? And it's something a lot of people just, they fall into rather than intentionally look at their schedule and design it the way they want.
Yeah. What is the heart now taking this to other people, helping them begin to examine this kind of change and contemplate this kind of change in their lives? What's driving that part?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, a few years ago, I remember at Slowdown School, which is an event I host in the summer in Northern Michigan, where therapists fly in, we work together on their businesses after slowing down for 2 days. We go for hikes, bring in a massage therapist, yoga teacher. So people slow down, put your phones away. This one guy, Dr. Jeremy Sharp, he has the Testing Psychologist podcast. He had crazy hours. I mean, his testing psychology practice was going amazing. He had a podcast going. He just was doing all this consulting. And to see him redesign his schedule and to get to know his family, his wife Carrie's also a therapist, and to get to know his kids when we were on this road trip, to see now the balance he has and to know also what's enough, not just financially, but we always have, especially if you're a business owner, 50 million opportunities of things we could be working on. You could write a blog post. You could start a podcast. You could do your progress notes. But at a certain point, you have to say enough is enough. Like, this is enough work for the week. And I'm going to close it down and I'm going to move into my time away. And that's a developed skill. It's an intentionality of hard boundaries and soft boundaries and sticking to them. And when people like Dr. Jeremy Sharp do that, they see that they become more creative and it actually multiplies the work that they do in a way that wouldn't happen when you're stressed out and maxed out.
Yeah. What you're saying and what you're advocating for, though, is this belief that one can create a work schedule where they can work less, they can earn more income, and have more free time. One listening in might say, that's just too good to be true. But in your book, you're offering an evidence-based methodology that one can apply to customize their situation to be more productive and balanced. Tell us how this isn't too good to be true.
Yeah. Well, I want to start with whenever I kind of go into any subject, I want to know the history behind it. So before we can even get into the evidence, let's go back a couple hundred years. So in the late 1800s, the average person was working 10 to 14 hours a day, 6 to 7 days a week. I mean, farming schedule before the Industrial Revolution, all that, people were just like grinding it out. You know, they really had rough lives. People were trying to protest against this terrible schedule, but it just wasn't working. But then in 1926, Henry Ford said, you know what? We can sell more cars if we give people weekends. Our own staff will buy these things. So in 1926, less than 100 years ago, we get the 40-hour work week. And once Henry Ford said that he was going to do that, other companies started doing it as well. And so we see that this thing that we hold as, oh, there's no way we could move away from this, it's less than 100 years old. I mean, the Babylonians gave us the 7-day week. They just made it up. You know, the Egyptians, they had an 8-day week. The Romans had a 10-day week. And so it's a lot of these things that we think are so true, the 7-day week, the 40-hour work week, they were just made up by other humans that
and
said,
what we
this is how
into?
We should do it. Right.
Yeah. And what are we buying into unknowingly?
Right.
Absolutely.
And then you think about what Fridays really have become. I mean, when I was a kid in the 80s and 90s, there was TGIF on ABC and it's like the end of the week. But, you know, Fridays were days that you'd host a birthday party, you'd do a team building retreat and do a trust fall into your coworker's arms. And, you know, it was a half worked day. Like Friday's been having an affair with the weekend for a long time. And it's time for us to just say like, okay, you get to become part of the weekend. We now know that we made up the 40-hour work week. We made up the 7-day week. Now we get to say, okay, what's the evidence actually say about how people work, how people are creative, how they're most productive? Yeah. Recently, Iceland released the results of a 2,500-person experiment that they did in working 4 days a week. The people were more productive. They had better health outcomes. They got more done in those. You look at Kalamazoo Valley Community College, Southwest Michigan. This place is, you know, like any college, it's unmovable in the way they do things usually. There was an HVAC instructor there who noticed that there weren't many students at the school on Fridays in the summertime. And he started looking at just how much air conditioning costs they could save if they shut it down on Thursday night. they've saved millions of dollars over the last 5 years just in AC costs, and they have better health outcomes. They have happier staff. People, who wants to leave a job when every summer you get a 4-day week, you know, and not a 40-hour week in 4 days. They do a 35-hour week, and then HR donates, quote, donates the rest back. So we see all sorts of evidence emerging around this 4-day week and just the effectiveness of it and how humans actually are designed to be more in touch with this kind of rest and relaxation that then preps us to just absolutely kill it when we're at work. Yeah. And we aren't seeing all these kind of worries of the industrialists come true.
That's really good. Really good. So you're kind of holding this up as we can rethink what was once a 7, 8, or even 10-day work week. Moved down to a 5 by Henry Ford about 1926, you're saying, and now we can begin to rethink, well, what if we were to create our own work week? What if we're intentional about that? Why does that have to be somebody else? Why not create our own if we have the ability to do so? How do you get people to start thinking about and start to lean into this evidence-based way of doing it? Maybe even what are some self-examining exercises that you might follow them, you know, follow through them on this process?
Well, I think we're going to see a kind of, we'll call it a triad, using your terms, of the average person pushing back against this schedule. We saw with COVID and the pandemic, the average entrepreneur, the average mid-level person is saying, let's experiment a little bit. Let's just see if we could do this, you know, throughout the summer, to do this throughout the fall, to work with their boss on, let's give this a whirl. Going to take the Henry Fords of our day to start moving in this direction. I mean, if tomorrow Elon Musk said across the board, we're doing a 4-day week, you know that would get attention. So the power brokers, they're going to start buying in. And then lastly, we're going to see it in the media. And we already are. I mean, you start, if you look at 4-day week, I have all my friends that know that I wrote this book. Every day I get 2 or 3 articles sent to me about different people who are talking about this. And it's like, this revolution is starting. And I think that in the same way in 1926, we saw this monumental shift into the 40-hour week, which was a step forward for the evolution of business then. I think we're in the midst of that right now, where we're going to look back and say, wow, like that 5-day week, we did that for 100 years, but look at 2020 until 2030. And we shifted completely away from that as a society. I genuinely think in our generation, we're going to see that shift.
It's really interesting too, isn't it? Like you said, COVID kind of shook things up and we had to think outside the box. And I work in a downtown office and I know, I work with a number of lawyers in my practice, and I know that most of those, once things kind of clear up and they have the ability to go back, they're not going to be going back. They found new ways to work from home, remotely, maybe come in once a week if necessary. These big boardrooms of old and long hours, it's going to be very, very changed, isn't it? So it's almost like there's a unique serendipitous period we're in right now that might get us to even take what you're saying and look at it, because we've kind of been practicing it for the last year and a half.
Well, I mean, I think about some of my early jobs when I was a case manager, foster care supervisor. I drive an hour and a half to have a 15-minute meeting with a probation officer and then drive back. Like, just think about how much money was spent in gas on just Joe Sanok spending 3 hours for that versus a Zoom call. Now, yes, there is value in meeting people in person, and there is that relationship that's different when you've met someone in person, but does every single meeting always have to be in person? I don't think so. I think that we've found a more efficient way where then we can use that free time to be more creative, to do our groceries so we're not as stressed, to do all sorts of other things with that time.
You know, you're talking about the time that we spend. There was some research done, and a decrease in work hours by just 10% can result in a 15% decrease in one's carbon footprint too. So this, like you said, or the air conditioning in the college you described, it can have layered results that are kind of beneficial in many areas. You know, as you're going through and talking to people, and we're saying we're going to condense this work week down, I would imagine that part of your task is helping folks examine those behaviors that are deemed to be unnecessary and inefficient. What are some behaviors that you could share with us that are typically unnecessarily added to and a waste of time in our days?
Yeah. So one thing I talk about is Parkinson's law, who a lot of people have heard of. So Parkinson's law is that work expands to the time given. So you think about that night before a paper was due in college, you know, you're like, oh, I got to write this paper, and you just bang it out, versus, oh, I have 2 weeks to do it. You're going to take 2 weeks. So that's the side of Parkinson's law most people know. The other side is how much bloating happens over time. So he looked at in military, how military spending continues to grow and grow and grow, and that layers upon layers of bureaucracy happen. And there's no one that kind of goes through and cuts that fat. The same thing happens in our businesses where, you know, we start with a certain project management system, maybe, you know, do some notes in a certain way. And then we have insurance and billing, but we never take the time to really go through and kind of clean it all up. Yeah. So even just looking at your own schedule, when you give yourself, you know, a quarter less time to do something, you're only going to do the best tasks. So say you've been working 50 hours a week and you say, you know what, I'm not going to do 10-hour days, 5 days a week. I'm going to cut out Fridays, or I'm going to just leave at Friday at noon just as an experiment. And you have 20 tasks you usually get done in those 5 days. Now you only have time to get 15 done. Are you going to get the worst 15 done or the best 15? You're going to get the best 15. The ones like, I got to get my insurance billing in because I got to get paid. I need to make sure these checks that were sent to me go to the bank. So then you start to say, okay, here's the top tier things that I'm working on. Now, do I even need to be doing these things? You know, if I had an assistant, you know, for $15 an hour that can go take checks to the bank and can check the insurance claims. Oh, wow. Now I just discovered 5 more hours of my time. Do I want to take on a couple more clients, or do I want to maybe do some marketing? Do I want to raise my rates so that I can do more private pay? Do I want to bring on a 1099 or a W-2? That's then that top level stuff where you're still working the same number of hours, but now you're actually expanding your business. You're doing things that enhance it, that make the bottom line better for you. And you're also employing people that want to do those things. There's people that are looking for work that would love to be your admin. They would love to deliver checks to the bank. That's a step above where they're working now, and they would love to do it. So you get someone that loves doing that work you hate, and then you get to do that higher level work to expand your business. And so everyone wins, and you work less.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Most of us spend more time at work than anywhere else doing anything else. So why not spend that time in a job you love? Introducing Triad's Jobs Marketplace, the only job site dedicated specifically to behavioral and mental health professionals. Featuring more than 1,000 open jobs from dozens of behavioral and mental health employers, and searchable by location, professional field, employment type, specialization, and more. Jobs Marketplace helps you find your next career opportunity. Full-time, part-time, or gig time, make the most of your time. To access Jobs Marketplace, register for your free professional account at hellotriad.com/BHT. That's hellotriad.com/BHT. And then click to Jobs Marketplace. If you're already a member of the Triad community, visit app.hellotriad.com/jobs. That's app.hellotriad.com/jobs. Visit us today and take your next career step tomorrow.
Yeah, I really like that. There's kind of a paradox in that almost, though, when you look at, I can do more when I have less time to do it. But there is a psychology and there is a research behind that. Like you're saying, people, you know, focus more on their work. They reduce their distractions. They push themselves harder to finish their goals. They increase their work efficiency. I know that Jason Fried from the CEO of Basecamp, he put into place a 4-day, 32-hour work week for about a half a year. And he said that, you know, their findings that were compressed work week, people tended to focus on what the exact same things you're saying and advocating. People work more and are more focused on the important things, the top tier things. And the time constraints, they didn't impact the quality of work. In fact, the quality of work was better. Isn't that a cool finding?
Yeah. And I think we all know this. We all know that if someone gave us a 4-day work week and said, let's test this out for 6 months, if we can have the same outcomes, you can go home and get paid the same amount of money. Yeah. Who wouldn't work their hardest to make that happen? You know, absolutely. And so what we're seeing is that on the macro level, taking away a day works, but also on the micro level. And so there was a study out of the University of Illinois that looked at vigilance decrement. So vigilance, how well we pay attention to something, decrement breaking down over time. So the idea when they looked at this study that was kind of how most people thought was you kind of have this glass of water of energy throughout a day. And you know, you pour out this energy throughout the day. And at the end of the day, you got to sleep, you got to eat, bounce back. It doesn't matter how you use your energy. And they wanted to see if that was actually true. And so they did this study. It was a super boring study for students. They got a 4-digit number, say it was 2136. So they sat at a computer. Whenever this 4-digit number popped up, they had to click a button. When it was a different number, they did nothing. So for an hour, they're sitting there just looking at number after number after number. By the end, there was vigilance decrement. The way they paid attention was worse at the end than at the beginning. So then the first group, they saw this vigilance decrement. In the second group, what they did is at the 1/3 mark, they gave them a 1-minute break. They said something like, oh, sorry, we put you on the wrong computer. We got to just hang out in the lobby for a minute. Just don't go on your phone. Just hang out. We'll get you in just a second. They had, you know, some Nature magazines and like nothing that would like kind of get them going. So they stayed in their zone, brought them back. And at the 2/3 mark, gave them another 1-minute micro break. So what they found was there was zero vigilance decrement with these just 2 minutes of breaks. So think about why that is. So, you know, if we look from an evolutionary perspective, you're walking through the jungle, you know, there's tigers, but for 30 years, you've never seen a tiger. Are you going to be hyper alert? You're going to be like, no, tigers sleep at night. Like, I've never seen a tiger here. Now, say you go down a new path or you hear something that disrupts it, or you take a break and all of a sudden you see through new eyes, you're going to pay attention to that tiger or whatever that might be. Right. And so even our brains don't know the difference between going through the jungle and getting that break and coming back into a new situation. And so that 1-minute break is able to then reset the brain to say, I have to pay attention again. And then 20 minutes later, that 1-minute break, I have to pay attention again. So we can use this to our benefit when we're doing work. There's so many different ways that we can allow our brains to be optimized to get more done. So it can be changing your lighting when you're blogging. So every time you write, maybe you have a little dimmer light and you put on headphones and you listen to a Spotify playlist that's just for writing. You know, maybe you sit in a different spot. And every time, that's like your blogging spot. You're going to get more done because your brain is then triggered to pay attention there. Then you set a timer for 20 minutes and then you do a 1-minute break. You're going to get a lot more done because that vigilance decrement just isn't going to happen.
Really good. Really good. These are some of the techniques you're talking about and strategies that sound like part of this whole methodology that can really make this come true. If we were to take this a little more specifically, we have a lot of our mental health colleagues listening in on today's show. Say those maybe in private practice or those involved in consultative services where we are typically paid for the hours we work, unlike a company that can simply make or sell more widgets. Our commodity is our expertise and our time, typically, and we're typically reimbursed by the hour. So while we can't shrink a 5-day, 40 patients per week schedule into working four 10-hour days just to meet the 4-day work week goal, what do you say to folks to help them make the most money from the hours that realistically can be worked within that 4-day or less period?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the model that most therapists use is still based on the industrialists. I mean, if you're sick, you don't get paid. If your kid, you know, is home, you don't get paid. And so first I would question, do you want the model of the industrialists to be your model? I mean, you probably don't think about people as just part of a machine like the industrialists do. You probably think they're a little more nuanced than that. So yes, you're in a field like counseling where if you're going to bill out, there's probably going to be 45 to 50 minutes that you can bill for. But is that where it ends? No. Okay, let's think about just for a second of what are the most common questions you get as a therapist, the things that every new client that you work with asks. So say you work with people with anxiety. We want to think about the things before that. This is what we might call the sandwich approach. So what's before therapy? Okay, people that aren't quite ready to come in for therapy, what are the questions they ask about anxiety? What are the services they need? What are the pains that they have? And are there ways that you can automate some of that? That could be an e-course. That could be a blog post. That could be a podcast. That could be an app that you have built for $5,000, but that you know ends up helping the world. So starting with what happens before you serve people in counseling? The next question you want to ask yourself is, how do I optimize the actual counseling that I'm doing? So for example, I was only private pay when I had my practice. We had 12 clinicians. We were 100% private pay. That doesn't mean that the only way to make money is through private pay. But if private pay is part of even part of your model, you know, taking all your blog posts or all of the content and turning it into a book that you hand to people, I mean, you can have that printed through Amazon for $2. I mean, that's like the best business card that you could give someone. Now, how does somebody feel about coming to counseling and paying $150 for a session versus $185 when this person is a published author? They have fancy coffee in the lobby. They've got LaCroix there for you. It feels a little more bougie than the average place. They're going to be more likely to want to pay more. So you're optimizing within the actual counseling sessions. And then we want to look at when you're ready to discharge, is that really the end? So say you do parenting work. Could you have a membership community where you bring in experts once a month and parents pay $29 a month for it? You know, could you build e-courses, you know, that will help with different phases of life? Because I think what most clinicians don't understand is that the skill set that they have blows the minds of most people.
That's really good.
You know, we know 8% of the US has a master's degree. And in any room of 100 people, you know, the 8 that have master's degrees, like you know, we're going to have accountants, we're going to have lawyers, all sorts of things. You're probably the smartest person in every single room of the average people around mental health.
Yeah. Really good. Those are very doable things. And I think we just don't know. Sometimes we don't know what we don't know about the ways that we can actually think. And as you're encouraging people to take a look at these opportunities, I know that change, regardless of all the things that can have a greener pasture for them to walk into and have that balanced life you're describing, but I know that change is not easy. What causes most folks that you're working with and what you're finding to struggle, maybe even resist taking the steps to move from this very familiar and ingrained work schedule to a reduced work week and subsequent work-life balance that could be very rewarding?
I mean, I would say that for most people, similar to every human, that it's usually either pain or opportunity. You know, it's that I'm feeling so burned out. I mean, I remember this one guy I talk about in the book, Jerry. We did a pre-consulting call and he said, my wife wants to be on the pre-consulting call. And there's actually a section called Jerry Had a Heart Attack. And Jerry, he's talking about how busy he was. He had a thriving practice in Orange County, just like killing it. His hourly was like mind-blowing. He had no reason to be working as hard as he was, but he was. He just kept working. And his wife said in the pre-consulting call, if Jerry keeps this up, he's going to have a heart attack. Man. Between that call and our first consulting call, he had a heart attack. And then we started working together and we figured out what is one thing that to you represents not work, like just not working at all. And he said, snowboarding.
Okay.
And I said, okay, is there a day of the week that it's easiest for your family schedule to snowboard? And he said, Wednesdays. Like he didn't even blink. He knew I should be snowboarding on Wednesdays. I said, okay, our best consulting work is going to be when you make snowboarding on Wednesdays as key to your business as any clinical work you do.
Got it.
And so he started snowboarding every single Wednesday. And when he did that, it just blocked things out where he's like, I work 2 days, I go snowboarding, I work 2 days.
Nice.
And when we do things like that, when we actually experience the pain, not that you all have to go have a heart attack, but whether it was the pain of potentially having a heart attack or having a heart attack, or the opportunity of just feeling better in life, not feeling so much tension with your partner, not feeling like you're burned out at the end of the night. I mean, he was checking emails till 9 at night. He works all day. He's sitting next to his family and then he's checking emails. Like that's no way to live. And so to be able to set those boundaries, you know, the magic that happened for Jerry is that in the years following working fewer hours, he was better able to focus in on the best use of his time. So, you know, instead of having high touch with every single client that comes in, he hired an assistant that was high touch, and every day he got a dashboard on all the clients. He could make the decisions in 10 minutes a day instead of the 3 hours a day. Boom, look at that. Now you have, you know, 2 hours and 50 minutes that you can put into something else. So he did bigger speaking gigs. He got bigger speaking fees. He was more kind of national or, and, you know, in the state of California. So it then starts to perpetuate itself and actually become kind of addictive where, okay, I'm snowboarding on Wednesdays. What else can I do? What else can I outsource? I hate doing this. I should hire someone to do this. I hate doing this. Someone should do this. And then you're finding the best use of your time for the impact you want to make on the world.
Yeah, that's really good. I know change is hard. Sometimes when I'm working with folks, I talk about it's kind of like a train. You know, they want their feelings to come first. You know, when we're making changes like this, sometimes it's like a train where the engine is us doing right things and just trying something. And the caboose is like the feelings. And sometimes we want the feelings to drive this, but the caboose never drives the train. And if we can hang in there and do right things long enough, the caboose, the feelings will catch up with us and we'll kind of go, you know what, this is the thing I've been doing or should be doing for years now. And life gets rebalanced, just like you're talking about this this clinician here. You know, I know you, go ahead.
Oh no, I feel like also sometimes so much of our ego is wrapped up in our business that it's like, if I don't do this, the business will fall apart. If I am not always the one that's the touch point, I'm the brilliant clinical person. I got my PhD. It's like, okay, great. You know a lot. And why are you still taking out the trash? Like, you know, like, so I think that just saying, I have no doubt that you did a great job getting to this point in your business, but most likely the next phase for you is going to look completely different from how you got here.
Yeah, I really like that. That's a great vision you're kind of casting here. You know, I know there are a number of companies that have taken steps to create shorter work weeks with their employees, like Basecamp and Perpetual Guardian and even Amazon. I know that you've helped, though, thousands of professionals, from authors and scholars to business leaders and innovators. And I know that recently you were the keynote speaker for the Nissan Infiniti up in Canada, I believe that was, and encouraging people to create the schedule that they want. Tell us a little bit more about that. And what are people sharing with you, their feedback? Well, like Jerry, maybe, that how their lives have changed with these changes having been made in this work-life balance.
Yeah, it was a great opportunity to work with Nissan Infinity Canada. That's so cool. They reached out and they were doing stuff around mental wellness and kind of mental health awareness month. And we were talking about how, you know, having a bulk book buy for all of their staff to have Thursday is the new Friday. They did that as part of the speaker fee. And so it's really interesting because, you know, Nissan's a Japanese company, so a very typically rigid company. Yeah. But for their teams, they had such innovative teams that I got to work with in the lead up to the keynote, where they have teams that are on work-life balance. They have one team called the Generations team, which looks at how do different generations talk to each other differently and work together differently. And so to see the innovation that they're doing was really exciting to come alongside them. And so for that keynote speech, one of their big things that they wanted was for me to break down kind of how different generations kind of think and in regards to mental health, how they act, and then also how they experienced COVID. So to walk through kind of each generation and then say, if you're going to look at any sort of retooling of your schedules here, of having, you know, implementing any of Thursday is the new Friday, we have to first understand each other. Because I think a lot of people in those larger corporations think, well, we could never do a four-day work week. But then when you really kind of get into the teams and say, well, what kind of experiments could you do? Let's talk through what this could look like. Let's do this for 2 months and have some A-B testing where one team does it one way, one does it another. We then don't have this as something that has to be forever, but let's experiment enough to just figure it out. And so it's really cool to see them starting to implement some of these things. And they have some great teams that are doing some experiments. And I know that when the book releases in October and they get that, it's definitely going to help them have more of a blueprint as well.
That's really good. How that'd be fun to kind of watch and see how that gets implemented. You're talking about your book. I would love, or we're kind of coming into the kind of final lap here in our podcast, but I'd love to hear some information about resources, folks to get involved with your website, your podcast, the different things. You guys offer so many things through your company, but also I'd like to hear about your book. So give us some resources. Tell us about the release on your book.
Well, I'm really excited. So Thursday is the new Friday is the book. It's in pre-order right now. What's really cool that HarperCollins has allowed me to do is if someone buys 5 books or more, we have some extra bonuses that people get. And so we put on an event every year called Killing It Camp in Estes Park, Colorado. It's the private practice conference. We usually have around 200 people that show up for it. 3 different tracks. One track is the Pillars of Practice. So it's short 22-minute, like TED Talk style discussions about just one particular thing, how to rank higher in Google. Give me it all in 22 minutes. So it's very action oriented. We have another track that's all around growing a practice. So group practice and kind of those next level things. And those are 52-minute tracks. So less than an hour, like get to the point, teach us as much as you can. And then on the hour, it switches. And then the third track, which I think you'd be most interested in, is all around multiple streams of income. So when we're talking about how do you just get out of my hour equals this much money, how do you get out of that? We have some amazing experts that have made millions off of e-courses coming in. We have people coming in that are going to be teaching all about how do you use membership communities in a way that's ethical in the way that we want to do it, but to actually expand our income. How can you use affiliate links and podcasting to grow beyond just what you could ever do just in your clinical office? I mean, those are 52-minute sessions too. So that's happening October 14th through 17th out in Estes Park. And yeah, if people buy 5 of the book, they get to a free ticket to that. It's usually $197. We also have other bonuses. You know, if you get 10, I think we have this mastermind group this 6 weeks. And then you also get 2 tickets to Killing It Camp. If you get 25, there's a half day retreat with me. Plus you get, you know, 5 different tickets that you can either gift to students or bring 5 people. So all those details are at thursdaysthenewfriday.com. All about the book. You can buy it everywhere. Amazon, your local bookstore. October 5th is the actual drop date for it, where you can actually get the physical copy of the book, but you can get the ebook. And I believe they send that out a little bit earlier, or the audiobook.
Really good. And your website, people can be directed to?
Yeah. So the website for the book is thursdaysthenewfriday.com. We have more over at joesanok.com as well.
Very good. Very good. You know, Henry Ford was quoted as saying, just as the 8-hour day opened our way to prosperity in America, so the 5-day work week will open up our way to still greater prosperity. He said, it's high time to rid ourselves of the notion that leisure for workmen is either lost time or class privilege. But I think what you're encouraging us, Joe, here is kind of a similar line of thinking, but you're kind of doing an Emeril Lagasse on us here, and you're kind of kicking it up a notch, and you're encouraging us to be open to talking about looking at our deeply ingrained ways of thinking about this work-life balance, and nudging us really to examine ways we could live and work more efficiently and effectively within a 4-hour work week and a 4-day work week, and really enjoy life to its really fullest. I really like that. Hey, it's always great having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, yeah, I always love it.
It's been a lot of fun. And to those listening in, we want to thank you for dropping by as well. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.